Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, my name is Bruce Norris. Thank you for joining us. Today, our special guest is Mike Shedlock. Mike is a registered investment advisor, representative for Sitka Pacific Capital Management. And he also has a fantastic blog site, Mish's Global Economic Trend Analysis, that I frequent every day and have learned a lot. So, Mike, welcome to our show.
It's a pleasure to be back on the show. And the easy way to find my blog is just do a Google search for Mish, M-I-S-H. It'll take you straight to my blog. I talk about oil, interest rates, housing, the IMF, Europe, gold, silver, you know, anything that's happening in the markets, I'm talking about on my blog on a day-to-day basis.
You are in tough times right now to be an investment advisor, I would think.
Well, tough times to be an investment advisor. Well, I think if one is on the long bully side, some tough times are coming up. But right now, you know, we have a market neutral. We've got a cautious stance here. Our mission here is at Sitka Pacific is to avoid the next decline. We had a positive year in 2008. Hardly anyone else did that. And we had a positive year in 2008 without being net short. And that is, you know, extremely significant, I think. We don't bet on the market going down. Rather, we just try and go to the sidelines, find some things we like better than some other things, have huge cash positions, and that's kind of where we're at today. Yeah. And for the last year, the stock market's gone up, and we've more or less been on the sidelines. And the S&P was up, you know, 12 or 15% or something, and we were only up 6. But we don't care, and we don't like the risk-reward setup. We think that the odds are pretty good that another recession is coming. We think that the recovery is not real, that the recovery is just based off of fiscal stimulus that's not sustainable, fiscal stimulus from Congress, and also monetary stimulus via quantitative easing from the Fed. I think both of those are coming to an end. The new Republican Congress here doesn't want to have anything to do with larger deficits, so the fiscal stimulus is going to end unless things get extremely nasty. And global growth is slowing everywhere, in Europe, in Australia, in China, in the U.S., I would urge people to be extremely cautious here in terms of what they expect out of the stock markets.
I think most of the investors that we have actually are more, they're geared toward real estate, but the mood, I'm interested in your client's mood as well. What is the mood of the client? Are they being very, very conservative? Are they more concerned with preservation of capital than any kind of aggressive growth?
Our clients are certainly in a capital preservation mode. I mean, they have to be because we are. A few of them that aren't have left, but we've pretty much held on to most of our clients. We added to them significantly in the downturn because we missed it and no one else did. And we're starting to see a lot of things here come together all at once. I think commodities are back into a bubble. I think housing still has a further ways to go down. We've already seen two programs in housing, like we've seen, you know, cash for clunkers, and we've seen the various stimulus packages in housing. As soon as the tax credits for housing ended, housing prices went back down. So what did we do? We just delayed things for a year, and home prices are going to go fall to where they're going to get anyway. Prices are going to fall until price meets genuine demand, not artificial demand coming from Congress. The very best thing that Congress can do for the housing market is to do nothing and let prices fall, let the foreclosures happen, let prices get to where there's genuine demand, and then we can find a bottom. And the more they try and delay that, the longer and further off the bottom is going to be.
You have a quote that I'm very fond of. It says, things don't get where they're going in a straight line. And a lot of that has to do with intervention.
Yes,
It doesn't change the ultimate direction. It changes the time frame. And I think that's why I made the comment, being an investment advisor is very difficult with unknown intervention.
In a way it is, yes. I mean, there are a certain set of people out there, momentum traders and the like, who expect someone to catch every move in the market up and down. Well, we can't do it. In fact, I don't think it can be done, but that doesn't stop people from trying to do it or wanting to do it. The population tends to chase whatever the latest and greatest thing is right before it's ready to plunge. That happened in housing in 2005. That happened in the NASDAQ in 2000. Some people who were bearish on the NASDAQ all the way up from 1996 to 1999 decided, oh, you know what? Right in 2000, they said, you know, we've been wrong. You know, this productivity miracle from the internet is real, and I'd better get in before it's too late. And once everyone gets that better get in before it's too late kind of scenario thinking, that is actually what makes the top. That's what made the top in 2005 in the housing market. People believed that home prices only had one way to go. Everyone had bought in. Everyone that could possibly, and people who couldn't even afford a house, bought a house. There was no one left to buy. The pool of greater fools finally ran out.
It's human nature, and that's one thing as an investor you have to be wary of, is that the mood of a market can definitely be opposite of the future direction, and it can change pretty quickly.
It can. It changed on a dime in housing. People were camping out in 2005. And, you know, it sounds ridiculous now. That was, you know, just 6 years ago. People were camping out, entering lotteries in Florida for the right to buy a condo. That's how nuts it got.
A condo that they probably never saw.
Give them away.
That's true. It's funny that you mentioned that. In studio with me is the son of my best friend, and they just bought a condo that sold for approaching $200,000 for $35,000. So he's going to college, and he bought it for, you know, 1/6 of his neighbor.
Yes.
Let's talk about deleveraging. Is deleveraging, that process of deleveraging, is that inherently deflationary?
Of course it is. It is by definition. Deleveraging means paying down debts. So it depends on what one's definition of inflation and deflation are, of course. Mine is deflation is a decrease in money supply and credit. So marking with credit mark to market. And so deleveraging has to be. Now, if someone looks at things in terms of prices, and they ignore home prices, and they say, oh, my God, you know, look at the price of crude. You know, there's nothing deflationary about that at all. Well, I don't know. Prices, crude's rising because of peak oil. Crude is rising because of massive monetary stimulus in China. Crude is also rising because of some quantitative easing by the Fed. So it's only that latter, that's the quantitative easing part, that's inflationary. But the funny thing is, I mean, you know, people argue, you know, about the price of, let's say, hamburger going up from $3 to $4, and they say, my God, look at that inflation. And I'm saying, well, the prime example is what you just gave. Now, what's really more important here, the price of a condo falling from $200,000 to $35,000, or the hamburger going from $3 to $4? Or, well, you know, beans going up 10 cents a can. You know, it's a huge percentage, but it's irrelevant compared to the drop in home prices.
Well, deleveraging is also, it's also paying down debt is one part of it. Defaulting on it
is another. Yes.
Defaulting is a huge part of it in real estate. because that's really where the deleveraging is happening, is the lenders who are not going to get paid the amount they have on the books.
Right. That's where my mark-to-market play comes in. When I define deflation as a decrease in money supply and credit mark-to-market. Now, for the last year, the banks have gotten away with, and the markets have let the banks get away with, keeping absurd valuations on the value of their assets on the books.
And I completely agree.
As long as those asset values on the books were rising, the junk bond market was going up, various things were happening that, you know, I would say, by my definition, are inflationary. Now, I don't think the market's going to let the banks get away with that forever. The National Accounting Board and the Fed and the FDIC have interfered with regulations, have delayed regulations two and three times now, actually for the last 3 years, on mark-to-market rules, on valuing stuff on the books. So they've kept this stuff on the books at inflated values, and as long as they were able, they couldn't get away with that in 2008. Then in 2010, they were able to get away with that, and I think we're going to see another big credit scare here, where banks are going to have to mark some of this debt that they're holding on their books back to market. The value of it's going to plunge. The ability of banks to lend as a result of that will plunge. In fact, that's why they're not lending right now. I believe banks are capital constrained, capital impaired, and also there's few credit-worthy borrowers that want to borrow. You know, that is the deflationary backdrop, and also we have a deleveraging deflationary backdrop. And in a sense, it's really about attitudes here. It's the willingness and ability of banks to lend and willingness and ability of consumers and businesses to borrow.
Now, what's interesting about that is what you just interjected was, has the willingness to borrow changed? In other words, is there kind of a shift in attitude toward debt by observing what happens to people that have it?
No. I don't think that there's been a willingness in businesses. If businesses were expanding, we would see it in the job market. If businesses were expanding, we would see it in loans going up. No. Instead, what we've seen is the value of the debt's gone up on the balance sheets of banks. But banks really aren't lending.
What I meant was,
the market is temporarily suspended, mark-to-market sanity. Instead, we have a mark-to-nonsense prices that have inflated the value of the stock market. For now, I think asset prices are going to plunge. I think commodity prices are going to sink. I think housing prices have a further ways to decline. And stock prices, junk bond markets, everything, as far as I'm concerned, is back in a bubble.
Well, now, what I was kind of getting at was the attitude toward the consumer. In other words, are they becoming a willing participant in deleveraging intentionally? In other words, they might even have access to credit, then look around and go, I'm not sure I want it.
Yes, actually, that's happening, and a lot of it has to do with people trying to refinance their homes at a lower rate. They have to bring money to the table to get that lower rate because banks are requiring 20% down. Well, if they're 35% in the hole and the banks want 20% down, they've got to bring 15%. So we're actually seeing cash in refinancing now rather than cash out refinancing in homes. So that's another part of the deleveraging process. That is voluntary. There, people are doing it so that they can get a lower interest rate on their house.
One of the statistics that's never happened before, because we've never had over-encumbered owners, but in Riverside, California, where I live, 71% of all the transactions are either short sales or lender-owned properties, which means 71% of the sales does not reproduce a buyer in the marketplace.
Right.
So out of 1,000 sales, we've lost 710 buyers for some period of time, and yet you still have 1,000 houses to move.
Right.
And that's the big challenge for California is you've got a lot of houses that should be on the market that probably can't be placed in the market because there's not really a owner-occupant buyer. And they pretty much refuse to give and give financing to investors. I'm not sure if you're aware of the financing for investors, but it's very difficult to obtain.
Yes, I'm certainly aware of that. It's Fannie Mae doesn't do it. The banks aren't doing it. So, you know, no one's willing to do it. I've even heard some extreme cases where someone wanted to put down 80% or 60% and couldn't get it. It's just not available. And I don't know, maybe some, you know, small local bank, you know, would be willing to do that, but the big banks just aren't interested. And you know that should tell you something. And what it should tell you is how capital constrained they are, how stuffed to the gills they are with mortgage debt that they actually want to get rid of and don't know how. So they just don't want any more of these kinds of loans. You know, plus we've got some new rules that say, you know, if the banks have to, you know, take 5% of the mortgage and put that and keep that at risk on their balance sheets, and so they can't securitize all of it. You know, they don't want any part of that either. So we've had an attitude change on the part of buyers and on part of lenders both. Lenders don't want to lend. People are waiting for cheaper prices because they think they're going down. It's the confluence of those two attitudes, and willingness and ability of banks to lend, and willingness and ability of businesses and consumers to borrow. Now, if you were a business, why would you want to expand in this kind of environment? I don't think you would. I don't think you should. Actually, any business that wants to expand here ought to be turned away as a poor credit risk because they don't know what they're doing.
Do you have an opinion of how real estate might get affected as they withdraw Fannie and Freddie from the marketplace, which is going to be done on a gradual basis?
It certainly can't do it any good. Now, it depends on what you mean by any good. It's part of the healing process. We need to get rid of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It needs to happen. So, but the short-term effect is going to be, it's going to raise the cost of obtaining a mortgage above a certain amount. You know, the amount that Fannie's willing to finance is going to go down. So anyone that wants to buy a home above that amount is now in a jumbo loan instead of a regular loan, and that jumbo loan has a higher interest rate, assuming they can get it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, that is going to have downward pressure on real estate prices. It has to. But, you know, so is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think that's a good thing because the sooner prices get to where they're going, the better off we are. And if that means that 30-year mortgages completely vanish, I think that's a tremendous thing. People ought not be buying houses unless they've got an expectation that they can pay it off, I think, in 10 years. Now, obviously, you know, not many people have been able to do that, not at the prices that homes were at. But, 15 years maybe is a reasonable time frame. Instead, at the peak of the insanity, you know, we were going into 40-year mortgages, and some people were talking about 50 and 100-year mortgages. You know, if you need a 100-year mortgage to make this thing affordable, guess what? It's not affordable. And I feel the same way about 30 years.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't see any reason for there to be any mortgages longer than 15 years. And if someone wants one of those, well, you know what? Maybe they ought to have to pay a lot more for that because there's certainly a lot more risk there.
You think there's more risk in a 30-year mortgage?
Oh, sure there is. People aren't paying, you know, people aren't paying the principal back fast enough. So in any downturn that comes, there's going to be less equity and more likelihood for someone to walk away.
I suppose someone who had to
pay the house back, say, over 12 years, you know, except for those that bought right at the very tip of the bubble, they would have some equity built up over the, well, actually, over the course of 10 years, they would have had their house paid off, right?
Do you have any negative feeling about
that? That's what I mean by less risky.
All right. Do you have any feeling about accessing that equity for business purposes or whatever?
Well, again, you know, I would tell people in general not to do it. That's what I would have said. I mean, you know, people thought that there was free money there. You know, the home prices go up, so let's take the money out. Let's invest in the stock market. You know, some very influential people actually advised people and wrote books and, you know, and said people ought to take money, you know, out of their houses and invest in foreign equities because they only go up, you know. And so, you know, it's all part of when you leverage up that way, risk goes up.
One of the problems going forward, and this is, you know, real estate is part of the employment cycle as far as definitely construction. So with the price destruction, let's say we've had in California, and I don't disagree with you that we probably will have a double dip in some of the inventory types because of the lack of buyers and the quantity of inventory. But at some point, the price will be, and it already is there, so far below replacement cost that there's no way to pencil new construction. So I guess my question to you is that when we get there at this price level that we're going to get to, that job market probably won't return. So do we have consistently high unemployment for a very long time?
Yes. Actually, I wrote a post 3 years ago or 2 years ago. I can't remember exactly when. It was called Structurally High Unemployment for a Decade. That was the exact title of my post. I remember it clearly. Just don't remember the date that I wrote that. And it was based on exactly that. We had, let's look at it another way. At the height of the housing boom, we were creating about 250,000 jobs a month. At the height of the commercial real estate boom, which lagged and kept the economy going after, you know, because we kept building all the what happened is all the subdivisions were built, and then all the strip malls and all the Walmarts and all the Targets and all that kind of stuff followed with a year lag. So the commercial real estate market, you know, kept on bubbling up for another year or another year and a half after the peak of the housing boom. So, you know, that supported, you know, that market. At the peak of the commercial real estate boom, we were only averaging about 190,000 jobs a month. Well, guess what? The commercial real estate market's not coming back. We're not going to have another boom. We're not going to have another build-out like we did. And we're not going to have another housing build-out like we did before. And that was 250,000 jobs a month. Now, bear in mind that it takes 125,000, unless the participation rate is falling, it takes about 125,000 jobs a month just to keep up with birth rate and immigration.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even if we did, and I did some math on this, said even if we did 250,000 jobs a month, we were going to have unemployment rate at 8% all the way out to 2014 or something. I can't remember the date. And that's if we did that. Now, actually, unemployment rate right now would be 12%, except for all the people that dropped out of the workforce. They dropped out of the workforce at a faster rate than I thought, and that's the only reason why unemployment's not making new highs right now. But it's at 9.1% right now. It was 10.1% at the high, and here it is. We've added hardly any jobs since then. And so now I believe we're heading into another recession. Where is this going to go? I don't even know if we lose that many more jobs because, you know, housing's already trailing along the bottom. So we're not going to lose, if we head back into another recession, we're probably not going to lose as many people as we did in the last one. But still, you can expect to see the unemployment rate shoot back up to 10%.
Mike, we're ending this segment. We've got 20 seconds left. Please go ahead and give your website again.
globaleconomicanalysis.blogspot.com. That's a mouthful. The quick way to find me is do a Google search for MISH, M-I-S-H. It'll take you straight to my blog. I talk about housing, interest rates, gold, silver, anything that's happening in the financial markets every day on my blog.
Mike, thanks so much.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.